This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
I want to talk a little bit about Rahab tonight from Joshua chapter 2. I don't think we get into the Old Testament enough as Christians. I know I don't. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about Rahab, not rehab, Rahab. A little different. In the story here of Joshua chapter 2, we have the children of Israel getting ready to go into the promised land. We've been talking about that, right? And the two obstacles that they face going into the promised land. Again, I can say we all have obstacles we face going into our promised land. What it's going to take for us to arrive at a place of peace in the way we're living. So there are two obstacles were the Jordan River and the city of Jericho. And God would take care of both as they exercised faith in what he was telling them. This is to be a secret mission, right? And it's so secret, he sends out like two spies to go out. And they're on this covert operation. We don't even know their names. Like, that's how top secret it is, right? You guys feel the tension here? It's like really heavy, right? And no sooner do they get to Jericho to check out the city and to collect some data, some information about what they were going to face. No sooner did they get there, they found themselves at mission failure and their whole mission compromised. And they found themselves at the mercy of a prostitute. And so this is the situation. Let me go ahead and read some out of Joshua chapter 2, and just check this out, if you'll get your heart around this. It says, Joshua secretly sent out two spies from the Israelite camp. He instructed them, scout out the land on the other side of the Jordan River, especially around Jericho. So the two men set out and came to the house of a prostitute named Rahab, stayed there that night. But someone told the king of Jericho, some Israelites have come here to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, like, bring the men out who've come to spy, for they've come here to spy out the whole land. Rahab had hidden the two men, but she replied, yes, the men were here earlier, but I didn't know where they were from. They left the town at dusk as the gates were about to close. I don't know where they went. And this was her response. If you hurry, you can probably catch them. Actually, she had taken them up on the roof and hidden them beneath bundles of flax that she had laid out. So the king's men went looking for the spies along the road. As soon as the king's men had left, the gate of Jericho was shut. So here's the situation they're in. The king's men are looking for them. They're hiding up on her roof. And here they're, you know, under the watch and the care of the prostitute Rahab. So in this story, Rahab is a picture, guys, of a prostitute with a very wise heart. You know, when you study this, and this is very moving to me. You have to remember the sins of Jericho were detestable to God, and this place was coming under the judgment. You know, it's all going down. Like, he had been super, super patient, and when his patience were completely done, he waited like another four generations even then. And so this is it. So this was the lifestyle of Jericho, like a lifestyle that was detestable to our God who is love. And so I don't believe that in this, and there's plenty of evidence to point to this, that Rahab was not a shame to her family. She was most likely a hero to them. Like, obviously she hadn't lost relationship with them. She had influence over them. I mean, I'll tell you guys, you know, from my point of view here, my history, my father had an escort service he ran from our home. He ran prostitutes in Cadillacs. My sister would answer the phone at 14 years old. She helped try to weed out cops that were trying to bust us. You know, my mom got arrested. A lot of stuff going on. Cops are always trying to bust my dad's business. And so he was sending out call girls. You know, this is kind of the way it was. And I'll tell you guys right now, if my sister had begun working for my dad and bringing in the business, she would have not been looked down on in our home. She would have been looked up to as one of the heroes because she's making everyone's life easier. And so this was most likely the case with Rahab. And we can see that most likely she's involved in prostitution to take care of her family. And we see this because of where her heart was when everything was going down. Like, I don't know if you guys do this, but sometimes we'll talk about if our home burned down, what would you grab and save? Like top three things type thing. And we talk about that. When it comes to this situation with Rahab, what she grabbed was her family and her loved ones and those people that belonged to them. That was where her heart was. She could have asked for a lot of things. She only asked for people to be saved. I think that's remarkable. I think that tells us a lot about her. I'm very moved by that. So back to the spies. This is one of those adventures where I'm going to Rahab and then back to the spies. And you guys are supposed to be in just crazy suspense, right? So a lot of people really focus in on Rahab's lie when you study commentaries, which I think is interesting because they're all focused in on the fact she lied, but, you know, she's a prostitute and thinks she's got more problems than lying. However, let me see if I have a joke about lying. Oh, I got a joke about lying. Here we go. If you've heard this, just act like you didn't hear it, and we'll all have a great time. It'll be great. And this guy went to a garage sale, and he saw a sign on a dog, said, dog for $5. So he goes up to the dog, says, you know, what's up with you, dog? And the dog says, I used to be a CIA agent, work for the government. I'd collect all kinds of information. I was like one of the best top secret agents the government ever had. And then when I retired from that, I worked for the airport, and I was one of the best drug dogs that they ever had. And this guy's like, this is incredible. So he goes up to the guy and says, why are you only selling this dog for $5? And the guy's like, oh, that dog's lying. He never did any of those things. All right. That's dumb in so many ways. All right. That'll melt the snow right off our shoes tonight, right? All right, so being behind enemy lines is very scary. Don't know if you had any experience with that. It's a very scary thing. Who do you trust? Where do you go? And to me, it would make sense that these guys would end up in a house of prostitution right out of the gate because it would be a place where a lot of people would be traveling through, a lot of strangers, and it would probably be a pretty good cover to go into this place. Doesn't mean they're up to no good. I just think it's probably a good strategy or where a person would end up going into a strange place, possibly. So think about Rahab in this situation where these guys are now here in her home, okay? And think about what she's experienced here. Think about the pillow talk that's gone on in her business. I don't know if you guys know a lot about sex, right? But there's a thing with men. They share intimacies, they share their heart, what they're afraid of, what they're worried about. They have a tendency to share what's on their mind a little freer, you know, when these kind of activities are going on. And these guys are no different. You know, Rahab had the opportunity to hear from men of all different walks of life. The high guys, the low guys, you know, kings, and super low dudes, like dudes from all over the place, right? And just imagine what she was hearing from people from all over the place about the children of Israel and this mighty God, this unstoppable, unbeatable, incredible God, and the fear that she heard from them, and the mystery and the power of these people whose God could part the Red Sea, whose God can do that. Whose God can just part the Red Sea? Whose God can take down the most powerful army, the Egyptian army, like just like that? Their God could do this, and she heard about this. You know, whose God can take a rock and bring water out of it, right? And these people who would collect food every morning, it would just mysteriously appear, and they would be fed. This is the God of the children of Israel, guys. And she heard about it, and the fear from the most powerful men and the stories from people all over the world. And this is the coolest thing for me. There was a moment and there was a time Rahab had heard enough from enough men from all different statuses, whatever, that's the right way to say it, who held different positions in life. She had heard enough that Rahab exercised faith. She believed in the God of Israel, that he was God, and she put her trust in this God. And that's powerful. She would come to this conclusion, guys. This God who had the pillar of fire that would lead them in the cloud by day. You know, it says that she went up on the roof. I think it's really cool when you look up maps of Jericho. You know, these walls were like 10 stories high, and you could see the Jordan River. Wouldn't it be cool if she was up on that roof and she could see the Israelites' camp and maybe even perhaps the pillar of fire and the cloud? Like there these guys were, like the greatest camp, the greatest people ever walked on the face of the earth, those people whose God is God, and what must have been going on in her heart. Like, no one, this city's going down. God, you got to do something. You got to do something for us, you know. I like to think about that. But now let's switch back to the spies, okay? If this was a television show, then we'd have a commercial. You guys would all be in suspense. And we'd hear about Doritos or something like that. And then when that commercial is over, we'd come back. And I would be focused on the spies, okay? So now we're all back. You come running back from the fridge with some more cheese and ham or whatever. Think about the spies. I really relate to them. These guys were sent on a really important mission. They were to go check out the land, especially Jericho, get some information and bring it back. And here these guys were. They no sooner get into Jericho, and the king himself knows that they're there and why they're there. Nice, right? Epic fail, right? Like, epic fail. And not only that, they're up on this roof being hidden by this prostitute, and there they are hiding. Like, what do you think was going on in their minds, right? Like, who is this woman? How are we going to ever get the data we need? Forget all that. We may not leave here alive, for sure. And is she collecting some reward right now, you know, so we can be hauled out of here and killed? Like, what's this woman up to? And we failed, we blew it. You know, this is lame. I relate to that. So see yourself right now in mission failure. You guys ever have mission failure? Anybody here, mission failure? Anybody? Anybody fail in a mission? Thank you. We have a little bit of honesty breaking out over here, just a little bit, where you're really disappointed, and you're really crushed, and you don't know what to do, and you're maybe hiding under your covers, and you're thinking about it. And that's where these guys are pretty crushed. They may not make it out of this alive, and God does for them what he does for his people, only the way that God can do it. And what he's done for me and what he'll do for you, Rahab walks in, and just check out what she says. And these are two men hiding and cowering in failure. And this is what she tells them. It says, before the spies went to sleep that night, Rahab went up on the roof to talk with them. And here's what she says. Hear this from that place. I know the Lord has given you this land, she told him. We're all afraid of you. Everyone in the land is living in terror. For we have heard how the Lord has made a dry path for you through the Red Sea when you left Egypt. And we know what you did to Sihon and Og, the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan River, whose people you completely destroyed. No wonder our hearts have melted in fear. No one has the courage to fight after hearing such things, for the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and the earth below. All right, I tell you guys, I was telling them Wednesday night a little bit about this. You know, 2010, we started the Underground. I believe that's when we became ordained as recovery pastors. And it was off to a great start, and it was awesome. And we did some amazing things, guys. We got to speak all over the place. And me and Glenna ran around terrified and doing our little dry erase board stuff. It was super fun. It was really exciting. And we got to go into North Star Jail for almost a year, and we did that. And all kinds of crazy stuff. It was a blast. And that this would happen for us was nothing short of a miracle. That I could walk in sobriety was something I did not believe in my heart was possible, guys. That's true. I didn't believe it was possible. I couldn't even have $20 in my possession without disappearing. And the distance I would travel with that $20 was so ridiculous, insane. I can't even begin to tell you guys the things I did to keep using. And here I was, walking in sobriety, being part of a community, telling people the good news of what God has done for me, that he did it for me. And me and Glenna ran around. You know, sometimes my face would hurt because my smile was so big, right? It was just this big, giant smile. One night, this was just over four years ago, a buddy of mine, his wife, called me in the middle of the night and said, "Stan, your buddy, you've known for all these years, he's in heavy drugs right now. He's lost his mind. He's tearing the house apart. You know, he's torn stuff. He's hurt me. I'm taking the kids. I'm leaving. We're out of here. You need to go help this guy because we're all afraid." And this is like 2 a.m. And guys, I want you to know all that we'd experienced in the power of God and the freedom of identity, knowing who we were. I was pretty confident at this point. Did I call Dave, like, which I was used to doing, my sponsor here, and say, "Hey, I've got this situation, you want to come with me?" No. I don't need to call Dave, it's 2 a.m, I got this. Did I tell my wife what was going on? No. I don't need to bother her, I'll just run over here, take care of this. You guys get it, right? You see this, what's happening? I'll just go over here, help this guy, I'll be back home. No big deal. I get over there, and the table's got my drug of choice all over it. And my buddy's just a wreck. And my buddy's worried about his family. He's worried about his sanity. He's seeing things, hearing things. And he's just pushing this stuff to me, saying, get it out of here. Just get this stuff out of here, Stan. Will you just help me? Just get it out of here. Go, get it out of here. And I'm taking this stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm walking out of this dude's house, guys, 2 a.m, with a pocket full of drugs. And I no sooner get in the car, and it dawned on me, I got a pocket full of drugs, you know. I no sooner get home, my wife's in the shower, and I relapse hard. And Glenna gets out of the shower and comes out and sees me acting very strange and, you know, puts 2 and 2 together. What's going on? What's happening? You're really, really acting in a way I haven't seen in a long, long time. And I run out the front door, off into the night, really, really crushed about what had just happened to me. My wife tries to find me. She's searching for me. She gets on a four-wheeler, gets in a wreck, breaks a bunch of ribs, guys. You know, my wife. And I'm out there half the night, whatever, just losing my mind. I come back, long story short, I'm sitting in my living room with my hoodie, sitting on the floor, just covered with shame. Some people from the underground, the leadership of the church, Pastor Derek, were sitting in our living room with me. It was a really bad night, guys. And I really relate to these spies. Because of all the people, you know, I heard people that were in crack houses told me that they had heard about that relapse. They didn't even know me. And people in prison heard about my relapse. People all over town heard about my relapse. Like, I'm sitting there in my living room affecting all these people. And the thoughts about myself about, was all that real in the past? Was I really free? Am I not the same guy I've always been? I'm doing here what I've always done, what I'll always do. I'm just a drug addict. That's what I am. That's what I do. It was just crushing, guys. I was so disappointed. I was so disappointed. We had worked so hard at our recovery for me to be sitting in that place. I sat there on that floor. I sat there for 3 days. I couldn't get my mind together. I couldn't think. My wife sitting there couldn't get anything out of me. People coming through. And I just sat on the floor. And just like these spies experienced, God was faithful to me. It was what God did for me in that time. My daughter was away in a discipleship program. And I don't know how many of you guys know Morgan. But she's awesome. She's a powerhouse. And she heard about what happened. And she said, put Dad on the phone. I've been sitting there for 3 days. And she said, Dad, I want to tell you something. She said, you are a powerful guy. And you always will be. You have rocked this whole thing of recovery. You and Mom have done amazing things. And you're only just beginning. You are destined to do so much more than you ever even imagined in your mind. This family of ours, I want you to know, Dad, we're a beast. And you will rise. And you will do great things. Because that's who you are. I found myself standing with that phone. I don't even remember getting up. I don't remember any of it. I just, all of a sudden, I'm standing on my feet, filled with the spirit of faith in who God tells me I am and being a son in this identity that must have just been so powerful for these guys to hear this from this person. We're all terrified of you. And they're laying under there in fear. And I want you guys to know that your enemies are way more afraid of you than you are of them. I want you to know that. I want you to think about that. There's darkness that's tracking you. There's darkness out there that wants to bring you down. Knows how to do it. But I want you to know something. They're way more afraid of you than you are of them. This is what we're hearing here. In one paragraph, this woman saved their mission, gave them all the information they needed, mission success. And we'll hear the end of this story here. She says, now swear to me by the Lord that you'll be kind to me and my family since I've helped you. Give me a guarantee that when Jericho is conquered, you'll let me live along with my father, mother, my brothers, my sisters, all their families. And the men said, we offer our own lives as a guarantee for your safety. The men agreed. If you don't betray us, we'll keep our promise. Be kind to you when the Lord gives us this land. And it talks about her house being built on the wall. And the covenant they made with her was that, I'm sorry guys, was that she would hang a scarlet cord out the window. And then when they came to the city and saw that scarlet cord, that would mark her home and anyone in her home, that they would be saved. Is that crazy or what? Now, this didn't happen. She didn't hang that cord out her window and then in 2 hours they came back. This was probably days, weeks, could be months. You know, how much do you think she paid attention to that cord and that thing was out there and everyone stays in her house, right? She became an evangelist is what she did, which is absolutely amazing. And I will tell you one little thing, too, about resting in the gospel and the covenant God made with us. That cord, obviously, can be likened to the blood of Jesus being on us. And when he sees it, you're saved, right? If that were us in our home, Glenna, with her childlike faith, she would have hung that cord out the window and then put on her favorite music and danced a jig. Why? Well, we got the cord. That's all we need. And she would have been boogieing around, making biscuits, having a great time, enjoying herself. Why? We got the scarlet cord. You know what I would have done? I would have started stressing out. Maybe they won't see the cord. Maybe the cord's not big enough. Maybe we need three or four of them hanging out the window, right? Maybe we need to wear cords, right? Maybe we need to make a trail of cords going all the way to the window. I would not be enjoying myself. Where she would have this simple faith, we got the cord, that's the deal, I'm having a great time. How many of us actually enjoy the gospel every day that we have it, it's ours, we're saved? How cool is that, right? How cool is that? Okay, just want to make that little point. In Hebrews chapter 11, it talks about the hall of faith, all the great people of faith, you know, Abraham, Joseph, David, Moses, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, all these people of great faith. It's called, here it says, great examples of faith, right? Some say the hall of faith, right? And of course, Rahab's in there. Like she made it. But here's what's interesting, guys. It lists in there Noah, but it doesn't talk about him getting drunk, being naked in his tent, right? It lists in there Abraham, but doesn't talk about him giving away his wife. It lists in there Moses, but doesn't talk about his temper problem and killing people. It just lists her name. But with Rahab, it says Rahab the prostitute. Like, wow, like to me, that's amazing. Like, why would that happen? You know, how do you guys think that would feel if Journey had a big celebration honoring people at Journey here, Journey Church? And everyone's in tuxes, and we're all having a celebration. And, you know, we have everything all done up. And Pastor Derek, yay! Let's honor him. That's great. And then Dave Wilcoxon and Flory, the worship leaders, yay! Right? You guys get it, right? And then Stan the drug addict. You know, I'd be like, thanks. You know, what was that all about? You know, why you got to call me out like that? And this is what happened. And when you look at this, you think, why? You have to understand God is a God of love, and he's a God of power, and he's given this woman this great, incredible calling that she can handle. She can handle this. And I've known a lot of prostitutes in my life, and I want you to know they can handle some stuff, and they're bad to the bone. Like, when God gets a hold of them, they're made of something different. Now, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's a big argument in the commentaries. Anytime you study any passage in the Bible, you're going to find an argument. You're going to just find them, everybody fighting and squabbling because we care about this. We're passionate about it. So we want to get it right. But there's a big argument about that Rahab wasn't a prostitute. She was an innkeeper. And you'll see that in all kinds of commentaries. They'll talk about it, that she was not a harlot. She was an innkeeper. And that's because in the Hebrew language, in the Old Testament, the word for harlot is the same exact word as innkeeper. They're interchangeable. So they have a really good point, amongst some other things. However, we don't just have the Old Testament. We have the New Testament. And in the New Testament, in Greek, innkeeper and prostitute are completely, radically different words. Right? And they could have used innkeeper, very clear. But when they said Rahab the prostitute, what word do you think they used in the Greek in the New Testament? I'll show you. You might recognize this word. In the Greek, this is what they use. Rahab the... You guys see that? That look a little familiar? That's the word they used for Rahab the porne, right? I think that's really interesting. So why would God call her out like that and tack that onto her name in the Great Hall of Faith, I think is interesting. And we have to understand something. In the world, we have indulgence. We have selfishness. You know, the symptom of having the sin virus is that we're selfish. That's the main symptom, that you have it. Do I have the sin virus? Well, do I struggle with being selfish? Yes, I have it. Symptoms are all over me, right? One of the biggest things is when a person gives in to selfishness, and self-indulgence. The height of self-indulgence is found in a culture's sexual identity, what they accept in society as okay and normal. And you can kind of take the temperature of a city by what's going on sexually in a town that's acceptable. You can tell a lot about a city about this. And it's no different. And I want you to know that when someone comes out of the height of self-indulgence, what everybody seems to be after, what everyone seems to want in the world, and when one of them stands up and says, I have found what I've been looking for my whole life, and it's not this, it's in the God of Israel. That is a powerful testimony to the world who's chasing this down like a mad hunter. And I want you to know something else, to a church that falls to this all the time, for her to be brought into our camp, she has a powerful ministry amongst us, telling the church, guys, I have found what I've been looking for my whole life, and it is found in the God of Israel. It is not in this. What a powerful place to be. You know, what an incredible ministry that she must have had in their camp. I want you guys to know that the people God uses and the people God has used in the Bible have way out-sinned you. Like, way. I want you to know that. They have way out-sinned me, right? And God has used them in a mighty, mighty way. Let me show you something real quick. See this triangle here? This triangle, people talk to me all the time. They go, okay, Stan, you're a Christian guy, and you don't party, you don't do drugs, you don't watch certain movies, you don't smoke, you don't get high, you don't do all these things. What do you do then? How do you live in this little tiny box? All these things you don't do. And this is kind of their game, right? And I want you to know this. This is a game. And you know what I tell them? Same thing you probably tell them. Actually, it's the reverse. I lived in a closet my whole life, sticking needles in my arms, hiding in the dark, unbending needles so I could use them again, in shame, in fear, and being nothing but selfish. I've lived here my whole life. And since getting rid of those things, managing those things through the power of God, I want you to know, just like David, boundaries have fallen in pleasant places for me. I've come out to be part of the world, to offer my life, to explore my gifts, my abilities, and see it in others, and live a life, a worthy life. You know, you can see this in Adam and Eve. Enemy actually let them think, like, why are you so restricted? You can't eat of any tree. He's holding out on you. How is he keeping you in this box? When in reality, it was one tree. And they had thousands and thousands and thousands of, they had the whole world. The whole idea is when you're standing in this place, looking at this, saying, I'm so restricted. God's word to you and God's word to me is, turn around. Turn around. Look at all you could be, all God has for you. It's the most marvelous thing to see. And I want you to know the benefits of walking free from pornography, personally, you know, free from drugs, free from addiction. Has it been difficult? Has it been hard? It is super hard. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. But walking free from shame, being able to look people right in the eye, not being having a double life, where I'm one guy by myself, one guy around you guys. I'm the same guy. I'm the same guy all the time. You know, my jokes aren't very funny here, and they're not very funny at home either, I promise. All right. So if we could just close our eyes for a minute, those of you who want to, and I'll just do a little exercise. Okay. If you want to do this, just take in one of your hands and hold the hand of Jesus, Son of God, King of Kings. And feel his hand in yours. Maybe even feel the scar. And this is no wimpy hand, guys. He's hands-on. Jesus is so hands-on. And feel his power. And feel his love. And feel his grip. Just feel his hand in yours. You have in your hand the source of life, the source of peace, everlasting future, wealth, love, all of it. He's the King. And He is our beautiful, beautiful King. And then in your other hand, just imagine one of the stones from Jericho that had fallen. One of the sins, one of the things that you really, really struggle with. And you're holding on to that stone, and you don't want to let it go. And you struggle really, really hard with this. And just think for a moment and experience for a moment, what is it like to hold in one hand the source of power and love, and in the other hand, this thing? And what's that like to have that in both hands? And then for a moment, align yourself with God's perspective. Just begin to align yourself with Him, how He sees you, how He sees that other hand, how much He loves you, the future He has. And if you have the courage, guys, opening that hand and letting that rock fall and letting it go. And then for even the more courageous, walking with the Lord on and beyond. This is an exercise I do, guys, often at the house. And I want you guys to know, Rahab did end up joining Israel's camp. She left everything she knew, and she learned a brand new language. She learned a brand new way of life. What was it like for her to walk into Israel's camp and see for herself the power of God and walk in one of those tents and become one of those mighty sons and daughters of God, the people of God? And I want you to know she did it successfully, because she became the great-great-great-great-grandmother of Jesus Himself. When you believe in this way, when you believe and put your trust in Him, I want you to know, the Bible says the world's not worthy of you. That's what it says. The world's not worthy of you because of your faith. Thank you, guys.